Wednesday rolls around once again, and you are tuned to the right place.
Right place, right time.
Thanks so much for tuning in. It's time for American Hit Radio on 90.3 WHPC. I'm your host, Tom Ryan. Been doing this for quite a while now with my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan. We're here every Wednesday and Friday between 5 and 6 p.m., covering some type of musical history, playing songs and sharing information. And on Wednesdays lately, working our way through two playlists, the top 500 of the top 40 and the alternative top 40. And we played seven albums, Heidi, for the past 7 weeks, seven albums from January of 1972, that 1 month gave us, it took us
so
longer.
Much goodness.
It took us longer to cover January 1972 than it did for it to happen in real time. It took us 7 weeks to cover a month of history.
We had to cover a lot of history in 1 hour.
That's right. That's right. Now we move on to February of 1972. And since we start these things first chronologically and then by chart position, the first song we're covering from February happens to be the number one album from that era. Actually, it was the album of the year. Neil Young's fourth solo album, Cold Harvest, released, as I said, in February of 1972. And it's album number 163 on our top 500 of the top 40 list. By the way, the other 162 are all available on our website if you want to hear the shows. And you got a lot of catching up to do if you haven't heard them.
Well, if you're in the pandemic, you got nothing but time.
Yeah, get busy.
Get to listen.
But if you check it out, you can just find the website at AmericanHitNetwork.com or search any, you know, it doesn't matter. Just search for American Hit Radio like the name of the show and we'll come right up. Anyway, let's move on with it. The name of the album is Harvest, and this is the album that was released on the heels of After the Gold Rush, which is generally considered to be the artistic high point of Neil Young's career. Now, the attention that After the Gold Rush earned helped to push sales of Harvest to extraordinary heights. As I said, and that helped to make it the most popular album of 1972. Now, this album might fall a bit short of the artistic high points of its predecessor, but it still had its own charms. There was this laid-back, alternative country feel that permeated the record, overwritten with a deep sense of ambivalence and uncertainty in the themes of the songs, especially as it related to personal relationships. For better or worse, this is the album that made Neil Young a household name, and probably has most of the songs that you know by him, at least of the hits. Now, as I said, it was his fourth album. Although it is considered to be his first country album, it features the London Symphony Orchestra on two tracks. His bandmates, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, make appearances on the album as vocalists, I believe, mostly, or only. As well as James Taylor and Linda Ronstadt. They appear on the record here and there, too. It was the number one album for 2 weeks. And it came out at a time when Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, when everybody was going their own way. They were having just all serious problems. And it was a bit of a super group that was just not meant to last. And so Young felt compelled to put together a bunch of country session musicians, like a Nashville group that he called the Stray Gators. And that is pretty much the backing band on this album. Now, one of the members of the Stray Gators is Ben Keith, and I would draw your attention to him on the opening track because he is the pedal steel guitar player. And he has this way of playing in a really laid back, loose, sort of a ringing style. And it suits Neil Young to a T. It might not be like the most technically
proficient
pedal steel playing you've ever heard. But then again, you know, you could say that about Jerry Garcia too, but Jerry Garcia has a way of touching you really deeply in your
very
soul.
Haunting way of playing.
the thing about Ben Keith's playing is that he manages to just suit the tune, particularly Neil Young's style of writing. So I consider him to be a bit of a star on the album, particularly on this open track. Now, I mentioned there's like a lot of ambivalence on the album, and the song is called Out on the Weekend. And it sounds like it could, on one hand, on a very superficial level, be sort of a love song to a new relationship. But it's also, you know, he refers to himself as a lonely boy who can't relate to joy. So Neil Young basically mentioned, like, you know, what that's about when he was talking about songwriting. He said, even when I'm happy, it sounds like I'm not. And when I try to say I'm happy, I try to disguise it. Because the way I wrote it sounds sad, like I tried to hide it. So there you go. On American Net Radio, 90.3 WHPC, the opening track from the album Harvest is this song called Out on the Weekend on American Net Radio, 90.3 WHPC.
I'm thinking of, she loved me all.
historically, you know, Neil always had, I guess, a little bit of country in him, going even back to the Buffalo Springfield days. But back then, he was more of a rocker than a country artist. He was like a singer-songwriter with like a rocker's edge. I think that this is the closest that he'd come to just embracing the country music genre and what it was about. And I mean, you don't get songs that are much more laid back than Out on the Weekend, with the drums just going boom, boom, tack, boom, boom, tack. You know, it's not your, it's not a drummer's dream record.
You got to serve the music, though.
But that's right. You got to serve the music. And Neil was writing a bunch of really laid back songs that fit really nicely into the country genre. And that's true on the title track, which is actually like a country waltz, because it is in three quarter time. And again, I mean, Neil Young's lyrics seem to get more and more cryptic with time. And on this album, it's really hard to get a clear picture of exactly what it is that he's trying to say. On the song Harvest, well, you know, we all know what harvesting is, but you think, okay, it's a country song, and the cover of the album is brown, and it's got like a little piece of wheat, you know, it looks very country-ish, and like, oh, okay, it's about harvesting. Well, it is, but it might be about like harvesting relationships, trying to figure out how you can take on love from somebody who's willing to give it to you, or are you kind of like pushing it back? Can you harvest it? Or are you incapable of that? That's how I've always interpreted the song. Hmm. The song itself, it's almost dreamlike. I didn't know this at the time. I have read this since, but there's a lyric that, did I see you down in a young girl's town with your mother in so much pain? Like what was that? I mean, it turns out that Neil Young's wife at the time was having issues and was attempting to commit suicide. And so it must relate to that somehow on a very deeply personal level, but was not meant to be understood, because that was such a personal thing that it wasn't the type of thing that you would be sharing with your audience. So it's just like this thing that's like inward, and it puts him in his own sort of like a dreamscape that is there for you to interpret any way you see it. And again, it's ambivalent, because the song is somewhere between like that dark, like lonely feeling, and also something about it that's quite beautiful and uplifting. It's pretty much where this album exists from beginning to end. Here's the title track, Harvest, on American Hit Radio, 90.3 WHPC. Thank you.
use it in the sun. Did she wake you up to tell you that it was only a change of plan? Dream up, let me fill your cup with the promise of a man. Dream up, let me fill your cup with the promise of a man.
Another song, like, structurally very similar to the first, in that it's just, it's dirt simple musically, but it's lyrically, lyrically complex. And you know, will I see you give more than I can take? You know, will I only harvest some? Again, it's like maybe he's not ready to take on a new relationship, or he's just dealing with his own ghosts that prevent him from taking on a new relationship. But Neil Young himself said that Harvest is one of his best songs. And I would have to say that Ben Keith adds a lot to that, because his pedal steel is absolutely beautiful on that track. Yeah. Well, the next song does not clarify things at all. In fact, it only makes this whole sense of ambivalence and like, I guess, the shroud of confusion of what the theme of this album might be. It gets even weirder here. The song is called A Man Needs a Maid, and it has been controversial from the very beginning. Almost everybody who I know who hears it judges it on a superficial level and considers the song to be sexist or chauvinistic. You know, a man needs a maid, you take it very literally, and it ends up sounding like, oh my God, you know, who does this guy think that he is?
Are you talking about a maid as in a young woman, or a maid as in someone to clean your house?
That's exactly where the ambivalence lies. But I've always interpreted as, like, you need somebody to come and do the work for you that you're not able to do for yourself. And I think that he even sort of intends it as that double meaning. He intends that cleaning lady side of it to be there, because again, he's sort of saying, I might not be able to take on a full-term relationship with somebody and live with them. I don't think I'm good for that. And if that's the case, maybe if I'm going to live by myself, I might be needing a maid to help take care of my things. But it's weird though, because the thing that really sets it off is the last line of the chorus is, when will I see you again? So if that's about a relationship, he's pleading. And if it's about making the next appointment for the maid, then it's just plebeian, you know? So there's definitely something there to it. Now, I definitely see it as somebody who is basically, once again, for the third song in a row, protecting his heart against being hurt. It's also rather interesting. Here's what Neil Young said himself when he performed it in 1971, before the album was released. This is on one of those live records that he put out in the interim. He goes, this is another new song. It's called A Man Needs a Maid. It's kind of, it doesn't really mean what it says. It's just the idea that anyone would think enough to say something like that would show that something else was happening. So don't take it personally when I say it. I don't really want a maid. So maybe that'll help clarify it.
There you go.
And what's also interesting is it was around this time that he started writing Carrie Snodgrass into his lyrics. He had seen her in a movie called Diary of a Mad Housewife, and he fell in love with her. He says that he fell in love with her just watching the movie, and she would eventually become his next wife and the mother of his child. So check out that reference when he mentions how he fell in love with the actress. She was playing a part that I could understand. On American Radio 90.3 WHPC, here's A Man Needs a Maid.
Like a beggar going from door. maybe I'd get a maid. Find a place nearby for her to stay. Just someone to keep my house clean, fix my meals and go away. A
beautiful song. I mean, the London Symphony Orchestra, I think, is kind of fabulous.
That was a sparge.
Right? That's a big step. And a very cool thing. There's a video of it. If you look for it, you can actually see that recording happening live for the album. And these three songs about trying to see if you could find or deal with love leads us to the song, which is the big hit record from the album, one of the biggest hits of the year, 1972, a song you've probably heard 10 million times. It's called Heart of Gold, of course. I don't know if you knew this or not, Heidi, but the backing vocals, that's James Taylor and Linda Ronstadt doing the backup vocals.
Everybody liked Linda Ronstadt except for you.
I liked her around this time. I really did.
You preferred her as a backing vocalist.
I love her as a backing vocalist. I think she's fabulous as a backing vocalist. Her solo albums, just since you brought it up, they relied so much on cover songs, and I don't think she ever really managed to do the song better than the original version. She had the same taste as me. The songs that she covered were songs that I love. But if she covered Little Feet, I'd much rather hear Little Feet than hear her do it. And if she's going to cover, you know, whether it's the Everly Brothers, I'd rather hear the Everly Brothers than her, you know, that sort of thing. And then later on, when she got into New Wave, I began to think, oh, now you're pushing it. But she's got a fabulous voice, and she does have good taste.
All right.
And
I'm glad to hear you say it.
The only other thing I want to say about this, about the album in general, is this being a mostly acoustic album. You know, Neil Young could rock out. His second album, everybody knows this, is Nowhere, was a really strong guitar album, but he hurt his back around this point and he was unable to stand and play electric guitar without being in pain. Oh. So he was basically taken to playing acoustic guitar while he was sitting down. And that's why so many of these songs are acoustic songs. Ah. It just was what he needed to be doing at this point in time. When Heart of Gold became such a big hit, it made Neil Young a household name, no doubt about it. The problem is with that, Neil wasn't so pleased necessarily. He was a bit ambivalent about being a big star. His quote was, you know, this song, actually, yeah, it's on the album Decade. This is what he wrote in the liner notes. This song put me in the middle of the road. Traveling there soon became a bore, so I headed for the ditch. A rougher ride, but I saw more interesting people there. On American Radio 90.3 WHPC, here's Heart of Gold. Yeah, you have to wait for the last 20 seconds before the background vocals come in. And you really can't discern James Taylor's voice in there. It's very good.
Yeah.
But Linda's is immediately apparent, yes. Obviously. All right, side one ends with a song called Are You Ready for the Country? It's a little late to be asking the question now that we're up to the end of the side. Could have started the album with that one. And actually, it's a song that probably would have been a good song to kick the album off. The Stray Gators here put in like one of the laziest like country rock performances I'd ever heard in my entire life, particularly Jack Nitzsche on the side guitar. It's like, it's just it's almost funny how lazy he's playing. And I absolutely don't mean that as an insult. I mean, just a couple of weeks ago, we played the J.J. Cale album, Naturally, and that whole thing was about being as laid back as humanly possible. It was just it was part of the times, singer-songwriters and basically, you know, playing songs that were laid back. And it's done brilliantly right here. Are You Ready for the Country? From the album Harvest on American Hit Radio, 90.3 WHPC. That's where side one ended. And of course, in 1972, if you owned the album, you owned a 12-inch version of it and you had to flip it over. It's interesting to note this, that when Neil Young was putting the album out, he told the label that he wanted the album sleeve to biodegrade after the shrink wrap was broken.
Ow.
So it would just like start to like rot and fall apart over time. And they were like, very bad idea. It'll be expensive. And if it gets damaged during shipping, it's going to be nobody's fault but ours. But he did get that, like that loose, like cardboardy feel, like without any sort of a gloss on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the next song is a true story. Neil Young tells the story again. He told this in the film Heart of Gold. He goes, about that time when I wrote Heart of Gold, and I was touring, I had also, just, you know, being a rich hippie for the first time, I had purchased a ranch, and I still live there today. And there was a couple living on it that were the caretakers, an old gentleman named Louis Avila and his wife Clara. And there was this old blue Jeep there, and Louis took me for a ride in this blue Jeep. He gets me up there on the top side of the place, and there's this lake up there that fed all of the pastures. And he says, well, tell me, how does a young man like yourself have enough money to buy a place like this? And I said, well, just lucky, Lewis, just really lucky. And he said, well, that's the darndest thing I ever heard. And I wrote this song about him. I guess Neiling was just relating to him, apparently. So, oh, one other thing to say. This song, Old Man, was a top 40 hit as well as, of course, Heart of Gold. It was his third top 40 hit as a solo career. Believe it or not, it is also his last. He has not had a top 40 hit since this song, when it reached number 33 in 1972. All those hits, all those songs that you know from Neil Young from the past 50 years, none of them were top 40 hits.
Oh my goodness.
This is the very last one that charted. Pretty amazing fun fact there. On American Radio 90.3 WHPC, here's Old Man.
God's children in the wind.
Quite obviously, there's the London Symphony Orchestra again on that track.
Right.
What is probably the most elaborate arrangement on the album. Yeah, I mean, it's obviously, it's That or A Man Needs a Maid. I think this one's like almost over the top.
But it's Nietzsche also, said, I've got a great idea for you, Neil.
Yeah, Jack Nietzsche definitely reproduced and I'm sure he wrote the charts. But that song just didn't, it sounds slighted by the arrangement. It's not... It was my least favorite song on the album, and it remains that way because it just doesn't really ever say much. And with all of that bombast, I would have expected more. Another song that in retrospect seems to miss the mark is this next song called Alabama. I loved it at the time because to me it was Neil sounding like Neil. He put out a song called Southern Man on the previous album.
Right.
He was calling out racism and he was focusing directly on, you know, basically the southern states, which were responsible for it. And in this case, he singles out Alabama specifically, and he rocks out, and you hear, you know, Crosby and Nash singing harmony on it. And I figure, okay, this is the rocking song from the album. It's the rock and roll song, but it's heavy-handed. Neil Young himself said that, you know, this is like Lynyrd Skynyrd. They would write Sweet Home Alabama because of this song and Southern Man combined. So, like, Neil heard their response song, and he said that this song richly deserved the shot that Lynyrd Skynyrd gave me with their great record. I don't like my words when I listen to Alabama. They are accusatory and condescending, not fully thought out, and too easy to misconstrue. I suppose in the long run that's right. But on American Radio 90.3 WHPC, here is Alabama.
Thank you.
Song is still, I don't know, has got some emotional resonance with me still. I understand why Neil might think it might be a little bit too strict in terms of lyrically, but it still works for me. On this next track, though, Heidi, Needle and the Damage Done. In fact, we're going to have to play the next two out because they blend together anyway on the album and we don't have much time. But he wrote the Needle and the Damage Done about, you know, musicians who he had known over the years who had died from heroin. And this, in a way, though, this is almost clairvoyant because his life would become so messed up by people around him dying by heroin. Now, Danny Whitten would die in less than, like, maybe 6 months after this album came out. He died in late 1972 from heroin. Then he writes a song about Bruce Berry as Roadie and puts out Tonight's the Night. It was a big part. It surrounded Neil Young. So this is, in a sad way, this is a bit clairvoyant. And that will blend into Words Between the Lines of Age. Thanks, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the album. See you on Friday.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. looking for something to plant.
Say.